decision on that.
All right. All right, we'll come back from recess, and we're about to discuss design. You want to begin?
Oh, I asked.
Oh, you asked your design. So what was your approach to designing this building?
I've got a PowerPoint that we can put up on the, I guess it's on your monitors and also on the screen, but just a handful of slides that we can walk through specifically what our approach to design was. And it's a particularly interesting question for this project because typically as an architect, you have any number of inordinate design solutions you can come up with. This site, and staff kind of walked through, this site is so incredibly complicated, there really are very few solutions to the problem. The problem is you've got an existing building that you can see up here where the cursor's moving around. That existing building kind of sets the stage for then where else you can do things on site. We knew we had a certain size parking component and a certain size office component, so there really is only one solution on where to locate things on the site, and that necessitates that backside of the site being the office component. When that happens, because of the phase one and phase two Moody not existing, you're really then encumbered by how do you get vehicles into the site because there's no ability to bring them in from the west off of McAdam. There is no street to the east where Moody would be. It doesn't exist today. And there is nothing to the south. There's an adjoining property there. So the only vehicular access is where it currently is today. And that really sets the parameters for all design solutions that happen after that. So if you take that as the base point for, you know, how we move forward from the beginning, that is the sole reason why there were the five modifications that were brought up and we worked very diligently with the design commission to resolve. All of those modifications really have nothing to do with the specific use on this site. Any building would have these issues that had office component and parking component. And So there's two kind of fundamental issues. How do you get vehicles into and out of the site, which we only have one access point, which is very unusual in the central city. And then the other is the existing building that was built in the early 80s, which predates our zoning code. So it doesn't meet any number of zoning guidelines. And those two factors right there make any project on this site almost impossible to achieve without having the modifications. After one or two hearings we had with the design commission, I think everybody was kind of understood how to move forward and what the different parameters we could move forward with. And I think you could talk about our design approach as a very collaborative process between not just ourselves and the ownership group, but also with city staff and with design commission. So if there was any word to really describe the design approach, it was very collaborative in that sense. How do you find a solution for this and provide a pedestrian-friendly experience as good as you can do in phase one, and when phase two happens, a very nice pedestrian experience ultimately overall.
Okay. Any other discussion about design? Thank you, sir. All right. Do you have anything to add?
No, just thank you very much. We look forward to providing further information to you. We see this as an opportunity to hopefully dispel some misperception and confusion out there as to what this facility would be used for and how it will be used. And again, we believe the staff was correct in its analysis. This is an office use with several accessory uses, one of which being this confinement areas. Thank you.
Thank you. How many people have signed up?
I believe there are three people still left on the list.
Okay.
I have Shirley Pape, Pat Prendergast, and Howard Karsman.
Ms. Pape, Mr. Prendergast, Mr.
Carsman.
Oh, that's right.
Sorry.
We've heard from him. Mr. Pape, welcome back.
Prendergast.
Sorry, Mr. Prendergast, welcome back.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
My name's Pat Prendergast. I'm a resident in South Waterfront. I'm also an office building developer and land developer. The last 40 years in Portland, Denver, and Seattle. We've built several million square feet of office space in those three cities. I've been retained by the owner group to help and assist them build this new office building. It is a complicated site, and so I was brought in last spring when the lease was signed with the GSA to help and to oversee the architect and the construction process. With respect to use, we relied on the city's judgment as to use. As I said, I've built a lot of office buildings. If you look at the building plans and the interior improvements that are going to go into this building, it is an office building, pure and simple. That's the primary use. It has a very small detention area for daytime use while they're transporting these people in to process them and then send them up to the detention center in Tacoma, which is a jail, and they keep them up there on an average of about 30 days. You cannot spend the night in this building. It's closed at night. There's no food available. There are no beds available. It is just a processing function that's part of this office use. There is a similar operation in the newest building in downtown Portland at First and Main. There's a processing facility in there. There are holding cells there for the same purpose. It's a different agency that uses them in that building. The primary use in that building, which is 300,000 feet, is office. But this is an accessory use to that function in that office building. Quick history. I was the original developer in the Pearl District with my partner, John Carroll. We bought the 40 acres that the Burlington Northern was selling. I've built 8 buildings down there. We developed all that land. We master planned it with the help of the city and a public partnership with you back in Mayor Clark's days and Vera Katz. It's probably the most successful urban renewal development area there's ever been in this state. We're very proud of what's happened down there. And ICE has been there for 3 decades in that same building. It didn't impair any of the growth down there. There was a Montessori school in the park blocks right where ICE's offices are. This same function has been going on there all this time. There is a very strong perception that you've heard about today with respect to use. And it's unfortunate, but perceptions can be very strong. There's nothing wrong with what ICE is doing with respect to how it integrates into a neighborhood. This particular project's location is at the south end of the South Waterfront in more of a commercial zone, and this property is zoned commercial. It's pressed up against the state highway and the I-5. It is a difficult site to develop, but the architects, GBD, who's the principal architect in the South Waterfront, has done a beautiful job with the help of staff here to have a building that I think we'll all be very proud of. It's a handsome building. It's going to clean up that corner. When the south portal goes in and the rail is put in 5 to 8 years from now, it will integrate in even better. But it's been characterized the use, I think, unfavorably for the wrong reasons. And if it worked in the Pearl, it'll sure work in South Waterfront.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your testimony.
That's a question of Pat. I probably could ask this of somebody else, but since you're here and you worked on the project. So you said it won't have beds, the detention rooms. So what exactly is a detention room?
They're just holding rooms. That's where they'll
keep the
detainees.
Okay, just... I guess
it's a secure area that they're in as they're being processed and while they're waiting to be processed.
Actually, Commissioner Saltzman, I wanted to follow up with Mr. Grunwald on exactly the questions you're asking, because I think you're hearing Commissioner Saltzman and I both greatly appreciate your testimony, and I wanted to just affirm with Mr. Grunwald some of what you testified to.
Okay.
Yeah, come on up. So the same questions Commissioner Saltzman was asking, if you wouldn't mind providing some more specificity about the specifics of what the rooms would look like and what they would not have. And
They won't have beds. I mean, for instance, when you talk about the detention facility in Tacoma, Northwest Detention Center has beds, showers, and all those things that go along with a dormitory or housing unit. Actually, we refer to them as housing units. Mm-hmm. Now, that differs greatly from a holding cell. And the holding cells, as was stated earlier, even we have actually in the confines of the Northwest Detention Center, they would have holding cells. But those holding cells are transition points into the actual dormitories or housing units. The differentiation is that primarily what you would have is none of them are dry cells, so they have toilet facilities there. Two of the four cells in the new building are just ADA accessible cells. So they have benches basically for seating for individuals that would sit there, and that's primarily what constitutes that holding cell.
Would there be more than one individual per holding cell?
There could be, absolutely. There are standards on that. It's based on basically the number of toilet facilities that you have in a cell and the number of square footage. Now, I believe those four holding cells, and I can't be held exactly to this because I don't have the plans in front of me, but I believe that four of those are can hold up to 14 people, and the additional one can hold probably, it's got two toilet facilities in it, and I think it can hold around 30-some people or something to that event.
So what's the total capacity that you would be able to have?
In that processing area?
Yeah.
Well, let's see, 14 would be 30, 42, and then for some reason, and like I said, I don't have the plans in front of me, I think the total capacity within that, if we were processing all the individuals simultaneously, would be about 75.
And how does that compare with how many people are currently coming from Oregon going to Tacoma?
Generally speaking, I mean, you know, it varies so much, I can't really tell you. I mean, there's instances where we would have a lot more than that. But generally speaking, probably anywhere from the neighborhood of, could be anywhere from 10 to 20 people daily. So, in the normal course of business.
So why is it much more? Why is it so much bigger than
well,
the current capacity?
That would be the norm. It isn't that much bigger than the normal, than the existing capacity. One of the reasons that we have, as you know, that the 511 building is an old building, an old facility. We have, for instance, when you have four holding cells, it enables you to hold, which we're capable of doing at the 511 building, you can hold females and males in separate detention cells, okay, in holding cells, separate holding cells. Also, if you have individuals with ADA requirements, they can be held in a separate cell. And then if for some reason you may have individuals that come in and there might be reasons that you don't want them in the same cell based on whatever their particular activity might have been, so you might want to separate them. So basically it gives us the ability to handle those people in that way.
Additional discussion? Thanks, sir. We'll now hear rebuttal. Go ahead. You can go ahead and have a seat as well.
Once again, my name is Scott Mattson, and I'm with General Services Administration. I just wanted to put a little bit of history quickly behind why we're here. The 511 building is a federally owned building in the Pearl District, and it was declared excess to the government in 2005. It was declared excess because it didn't fit the agency's needs, and the cost to upgrade it to the agency's needs would be tremendous. So we've been trying diligently for the last 5 years to move them, but wanted them to remain within the Central Business District, you know, for all the stakeholders that are interested in that. It's the only reason we move people out of the Central Business District is when it's mission-related or we can't find a space that suits their needs. This space is in the district, and it suits the agency's needs. We believe that this facility is a good match for our customer and for Portland. The move doesn't represent ICE expanding or anything like that. They're consolidating some of their programs, so they'll be able to move people from a few different offices to one location. It's going to save the taxpayers money. It's going to make them more efficient. And Elizabeth Godfrey, who was here but couldn't stay, she's the assistant field office director for ICE. She's worked in the Portland Pearl District for 20 years and has informed me that her organization's neighbors in the Pearl District have never registered a complaint with her. she expects that she's going to have the same type of relationship in this district. And for GSA, we understand that the Southwest waterfront neighborhood has some concerns. We are have offered to brief them on this project and discuss our concerns about the facility, and our offer still stands. So we're willing to meet with them and discuss anything about the project. We think it's beneficial for the taxpayer, for the federal employees working there, and for the Portland CBD. We're having somebody move out of a federal building that doesn't pay property taxes, moving into a location that is paying property taxes. That's one of the values that coming to the Central Business District adds to Portland. So we just wanted to highlight those issues. And thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, sir.
One question.
Question, yeah.
One question, Mr. Mattson. There was testimony about at some point the RFP or whatever switched from office building with an accessory detention center to a detention center with accessory office. Can you comment on that?
I would have to look at the specific language. We've been out with solicitations for them a number of times over the years and not finding success. If we did find success, it was at a rate that was not beneficial to anybody. And I think sometimes it's that leftover language from previous things as we evolve. So I really don't know that why it would say that or the definition. I do know that this is a small piece of what they're doing. But that's about the best I can come up with on that one.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
I'm sure Mr. Davis will have a comment on that.
I just hope you remember all the questions you asked the previous people so that I get a chance to answer them. however, if you want the specific language, I have it within 30 feet of us right now. And I read it to you when I made my opening statements. In terms of design, it should be underlined that nothing beyond phase one is going to be implemented for at least 5 to 8 years if funds are available. And if funds aren't available, it won't be implemented. And there's more than one. There's a phase one, a phase two, and a phase 2A. So this could go out quite some time. And I believe, the gentleman can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe this lease, which, by the way, is kind of a strange lease in that it's not really a lease until they accept the building to go into it. What they sign, they can walk away from what I read in their 762-page call for bids. But I think the
how is that germane?
Well, hang on to that thought, and I'll get back to you in a minute, as somebody once said. 15 years, is that not correct?
It's a 15-year lease. It does not take...
Hey, I'm running the hearing here now.
I'm sorry.
You can't talk.
Could you ask our guest from GSA whether the lease will be for 15 years?
Continue.
If it is for 15 years, which I think it is, there's no guarantees that nothing will go beyond phase one in this thing. And quite frankly, I think many of us know that there's more than a few buildings in the city of Portland that were going to be phased in but never got beyond phase one. So what you see in phase one may be there for 15 or for how many years? There will be.
And your concern about that is?
Well, they're promising us pretty pictures, but they're only delivering us the bare minimums. And they didn't mention, by the way, and they should have, that or they gave us a very sanitized vision of what this building is about. They didn't mention the buses that will be pulling in with customers, if you will. They didn't mention about 65-foot semi-trailers with containers, I understand. At least that's the way they do it in San Diego, with customers in containers, which will be coming in there. I have several concerns, which I can't discuss now because I didn't put it on the record, as to why GSA is not really enforcing many of the things that they are requiring within this thing, but that's not germane either. So let me go back to a couple things that you folks were interested in, one of which is proportionality. The concept that if something is 90% one thing and 10% another, therefore it's 100% the first thing. There's nothing in the code that supports that. Absolutely nothing. There's either primary or accessory classes, period. Now, GSA has said that this is a detention facility. It's just that clear. And I don't see where there should be any question as to that.
Did they say that in the current application?
I have the one from 2009, sir.
Is that what was used for this?
I believe it was.
Okay.
But I don't have personal knowledge of that. I would say, too, that for those folks that are really interested as to the how the sticky end of this project really works, within the materials I submitted, there's a letter from one of our board members who was an immigration attorney for several years, and she explains what goes on in these things. And it's not, people aren't just held there for 12 hours.
So do you dispute that they would be, are you saying they would be held overnight?
I don't know where they're held. I'm just suggesting that you read the information that that we submitted, because she does talk specifically about how this thing really works.
Do you agree that if they were held overnight, that would be a violation of code? Building occupancy?
I would have to read that particular code. I am really focused.
It would be.
Pardon?
I think it would be.
Well, I'll take your word for it, and I hope you're right.
We'll ask staff.
There is a couple things that questions that should have been asked that haven't been asked, and that is, does ICE have a real-time database? And when are detainees logged in? Because as I understand it now, it's only after the fact, so they do have a tendency to lose some of their people, especially when their attorneys are looking for them. And also, there is a penchant for secrecy, and I'm sure all you folks know that there's a big difference between a direct question asked and an answer that says, to my best knowledge. So I'm trying desperately to be nice today, but I will point out just one other thing, that there will be armed guards there. This is not just your average run-of-the-mill office building. There will be no new employees coming into this thing. This project will not bring one more job to the city, although it will bring...
I'm trying to help you here by asking you how that relates to the criteria that we have to use and only use.
Well,
we've been asking questions about functionality, and those are fair, but where is armed guards part of the code-based decision-making criteria that we are?
I'm trying to respond to what was said previous to what I'm speaking now. And I'm really appalled that we haven't heard the reality of the situation. What we've been getting is a Disneyland view of it. And I'm surprised that, especially you, Mayor Adams, didn't jump on that, because usually you're very insightful to these things. So that's where I'm coming from. I'm saying that, okay, this is what they said. I'm responding to what they said.
So you're saying that the armed guards indicate that it's not just an office use? Is that your point?
That's my point.
Okay.
When you use the term armed guards, you're talking about the ICE officers that are the federal officers that are armed? Because something you submitted also said there were guard stations, there were guard lookouts.
Let me try to be as clear as I can with you, Mr.
Let me just finish. There was nothing. So I was looking through the plans, and I didn't see anything that would indicate turrets that guards would be in or what you seem to be implying. So when you say armed guards, are you talking about the armed ICE officers themselves?
Again, let me be very, very careful how I answer this. According to paperwork I got, there will be federal officers that will be armed outside of the facility. There will be a guardhouse there.
And so I haven't seen that, so have you submitted that to us?
Probably not, because I'm still functioning on conditional use as my primary focus.
Okay.
But I haven't finished the answer to your question. I have heard that ICE is now looking at rent-a-cops for some of their exterior stuff. I have read that on the internet. I don't know that's a true fact or not, but I do know that in all cases, there will be people with guns there, but not inside the facility. Yes?
So since we have another week where the record will be open to address uses, it would be helpful to me if you would submit anything else that you have, and we'll certainly look at it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I just want to make sure I heard one point clear so I can follow up with staff. You're saying you're... understanding is what percentage is related to what you call detention or processing, and what percentage of the use is related to office building?
In a document that I read, I believe the architect said only 7% was of the space was devoted to cells or holding rooms, and the rest of it was office space. But that's irrelevant.
I'm just trying. It was a point you just
made. The point is that there is
made
no...
made a few minutes ago, and I'm just trying to understand clarity of the point and the relevance.
Well, okay, let's see if I can make it clearer. There is no such thing as proportionality within the Title 33 of the Code. One thing is either this or it's that. My point is that the leasee has described this as a detention facility. Somehow or other, and I've got a document from the architect that says that no, this is actually an office, or it should be a utility, or perhaps a group home. So that consequently, it would appear to reasonable men and women, that if nothing else, the applicant is doing everything they can to avoid conditional use, and I don't know why. And so, if I were king, I'd say that would be something for you guys to figure out, because I can't figure it out. I've only been working on this for 8 months.
It's our job to figure it out. Anything we haven't covered, do you want to cover?
No, I want to go home.
Okay. You've done a great job as usual. Thank you.
Well, you're
kind.
Thank
you, sir. Staff, come back up. Are there any points that we have focused on that you have some insight into?
Do you have any comments on the 300-foot radius issue in the school? I realize that.
You know.
For the record.
I should say knowledge. Do you have any knowledge
of
that issue?
For the record, you are?
Kara Fioravanti, thanks. With regard to that issue, it's not a city requirement. It's a government requirement. I didn't feel like I got an answer as to... I guess the answer that we heard is that it's not a requirement, it's a regulation, and it doesn't necessarily have to be met.
Do you have knowledge whether the school came after the lease was signed?
No, I don't have information on when things were signed. We wouldn't have that information at the city. We have building permit information on the school that I could look into in terms of dates, but in terms of when actual leases were signed.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Are there other points that we've spent time on that you have some insight to add before we ask you some questions?
Sure. I do want to read this analysis from the lawyers. I want to go over some of the testimony that I heard on tape because I kind of felt like I heard a little bit about the facility acting like a probation facility. Maybe I heard incorrectly, and that's why I want to go back. That made me question back to detention facility. That's an example of a detention facility. And then the judicially required, I'm not sure today if I heard what I've read in Exhibits A3 and A4, so that's another thing I want to go back to and listen to more carefully, and maybe it's answered more clearly in here, but I'm frankly questioning what I heard today with regard to those two items.
So since the record is open for another week, are there particular items that you would like to get more information on from citizens that would then help you inform us with a further staff report? Are there any particular questions that you'd like to hear more comments or details
from
on?
From the citizen testimony?
From either side.
From the side opposed to the project, no, I think I heard plenty of consistent testimony. I think I'll have some questions of the applicant. I do have some questions of the applicant right now, but they may be answered in this,
okay,
which I have not read.
Thank you.
I'm a couple of things I'm interested in more is the impact of the phases. Does the impact of potential phasing under law change the definition of its use? Percentage of use in one, in one phase is a different percentage of use. Does that you and your staff and legal staff, does that change anything? Which is one of the concerns I heard raised. You don't have to answer now. You can answer later.
Okay.
The other is the, you raised some of the questions that the testimony raised for me in terms of, at what point does something go from processing to a different category of detention? And I'd like you to, by way of possibly putting other conditions, if, and I'm not saying one way or another, but one of the options, based on any experience of the existing facility at the 511 building, I just want to check out whether operationally it has, from the police bureau and others, it really has been as unimpactful, non-impact as they describe.
I have a partial answer to that point. We did look into nuisance complaints received by Bureau of Development Services on that site, and we looked at all of our records. We didn't find any complaints to BDS. Complaints to other bureaus, police bureau in particular. We did not look into that yet, but we could.
That would be useful information. I'm also interested in whether we could add conditions of approval if we approve the design review to make sure that the phase two, and I'm interested to know what 2A is. I'm going to have to look into that further to make sure that those improvements happen. I'm also interested in whether we could condition approval of the design review on the processing facility part having a conditional use review.
Separate.
So that would be possibly a condition of approval of the design review to have then a subsequent conditional use review. I think what I heard today was a lot of concern that some of the right questions haven't been asked. Given the experience that we've had with the 511 building and the intent of South Waterfront to be mostly jobs rather than mostly housing when it was first designed, that it was intended to be office uses. I'm really interested in looking at how could we make sure that the what's happened in South Waterfront with more residential uses get their concerns heard and addressed in a conditional use process for that part of the facility.
All right. Catherine?
If council has no more questions, I think I want to reiterate sort of what the timeline is. I would suggest that the council declare the public testimony portion of the hearing closed at this point, but the record would be left open as follows. People would have until 5 p.m. on January 26th to submit new evidence on the use classification issue. People would have until 5 p.m. on February 2nd to respond to the new evidence submitted during the first 7-day period. The applicant would have until 5 p.m. on February 7th to submit final argument, not more evidence. And then the council would continue the hearing until either February 9th or February 16th. You need to pick a date and a time, at which point you will come back and deliberate. You will have had a chance to review the new evidence and the rebuttal to that's been submitted. And once you've made a tentative decision, then you would adopt findings and make a final decision on February 23rd. So the immediate decision we need from you is what date and time to continue the hearing to.
And the 9th and the 16th are Wednesdays?
I believe they're both Wednesdays. I believe there are 4 council members here on the 9th and all 5 here on the 16th, if I remember correctly.
So 16th, okay.
Is that correct?
All 5 are here.
All 5 are here on the 16th, yes.
And I thought, and who did you have 23rd? Not here on the 9th?
Well, you're gone in the afternoon.
I actually think that's changed, so I can be here.
Okay, the afternoon is the safety recognition awards.
Oh.
So
on the 9th?
On the 9th, yeah. If you want to follow that or...
We do want to follow the safety recognition awards.
Probably not.
They go long.
Yeah. So the 16th?
16th?
Okay.
At what time?
So you would continue it to February 16th at 2 o'clock. Is that correct, Carla?
We could do it 2 o'clock. That's right. Normally a 6 p.m. day, but...
Oh, it's a 6 p.m. day?
The third Wednesday we kind of hold for a 6 p.m., but...
Oh, but there's nothing scheduled.
Nothing
right
is scheduled. Right, oh. So
the 16th would be at...
2 p.m.
2 p.m.
Thursday the 10th, who's there? Who's here?
You're not going to be gone.
I will be gone on
you
the
will
10th.
You will be gone the 10th.
Okay. 16th at 2 p.m.?
16th at 2 p.m. One thing I wanted to clarify is that testimony should be submitted to the council clerk in the city auditor's office.
So if you send it to a city council member, it doesn't count?
No guarantee that it'll get there.
Yep.
And we should probably not respond to testimony that we receive in the interim. Is that correct or not?
Correct.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so we will continue this hearing.
I just wanted to let the public who's left know we're going to get the timeline that Catherine listed. We're going to get that on the BDS website and then provide Carla's name so people know where to send the testimony.
All right, we are adjourned for the week. Thank you all for your testimony.